you know, just as a small token of our appreciation and to your listeners, they can go on to sodelivery.com on our ordering website and just put in a promo code Austin All Day, and they'll get free pot stickers, man.
So, Chinese delivery, this is what we're here to talk about. Angel, Ming, wow, thank you for coming. And tell us about it, I guess, in a nutshell. What is so?
You know, it was really just a culmination of the pain and heartaches that I've gone through initially as a mom and pop Chinese restaurant. I mean, we've all worked in the food industry now at this point, and you know, there are a lot of inefficiencies when you talk about back of house, front of house, the communication between the back and front of house. And then you've got the customers, the communications with them, logistics, kitchen logistics. You know, I was in the Chinese food industry for pretty much, you know, all of my restaurant professional life. And so for us, takeout and delivery was a huge part of our business, right? I mean, you think delivery and it was synonymous with pizza. You say the word takeout and it was Chinese food, right?
Right.
And so that was how we kind of understood restaurant life growing up. And we then went into some other ventures that included Chinese food. And then one of the things that I realized is that I'm not actually a restaurant person. And I'm really more an entrepreneur, and I'm kind of like, you know, someone once called me, you're really just a restaurant engineer and not really a restaurateur. And I was like, okay, I guess I could see that. But at the end of the day, what I spent most of my time trying to figure out is how do we improve the inefficiencies and or the lack of efficiencies throughout the restaurant. And after about, 10 years of doing that, 10, 12 years of doing that, I said, you know, it just makes so much more sense for Chinese to do what pizza has done in the industry. It just makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
You know, you've got the delivery, you've got this highly, you know, transportable food that still transports well in containers. And, but then I also recognized that you needed really good tech. And this is when like Domino's Pizza was really, they had revamped their entire corporate culture and their food. But then one thing that they didn't really market heavily was they invested a ton of money into their tech platform, right?
Okay, yeah.
And I was kind of into that. And so, and then I knew Angel. I knew he was really brilliant in his work as a software engineer.
Yeah, this is his forte.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And like, I give a ton of credit to Angel. You know, yeah, Chinese food might have been my wife and I in the beginning, and this is kind of the vision we had. But Angel's expertise in the software and the quality assurance world has totally, completely changed my vision and understanding of how things work. So,
well, that's awesome. I mean, the website's beautiful. And that's where you came into play doing this. And you guys are both co-founders in this. There's what, four total?
Yeah, well, there's several players on this. Right now, the core four founders are myself, my wife, Jenna, who is our chief culinary officer. Yeah. And then, of course, we've got Angel, co-founder and CTO, and his wife, Eunice, who is our chief people officer. And she handles all our marketing right now as well. And so
Excellent. Right now, it's
the four of us. It's two married couples working together, but we figured a way to make it work.
How's the dynamic? You guys get through it?
It works.
Sure, it's fun.
It works.
Yeah.
It took a while to figure it out, but I think our relationship, it's like getting into marriage, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
And learning each other's quirks.
Sure.
And it took us a while to figure out, to gel in terms of like working relationship.
And we have four unique personalities, right? None of us are actually exactly anywhere close to being the same.
That's good,
man. But I think what we did is we made it really clear from the beginning, look, here's the vision. And if at the end of the day, our goal is the same, which is let's just make so the baddest kick-ass Chinese software tech platform we could think of. Then everything just fell into place for us. We got lucky in that sense, yeah.
You guys are locally based, but what you're going for is basically like a Domino's kind of concept for Chinese, American Chinese, right? Mm-hmm. That is also a focus of your cuisine.
Yep. No question. You know, we take a tremendous amount of pride of birthing, you know, So Chinese Delivery here in Austin. you know, I'm practically an Austinite. I wasn't born here, but again, you know, 35 plus years here in Austin.
You were born where?
I was born in Korea.
Okay, South Korea.
South Korea.
That's right.
Maybe North Korea, I don't know. but South Korea, and, you know, we came straight to Austin. And again, with the exception of a short stint in Cali, I've been here all of my life. I went to school here. I went to UT. And so
you've seen this city change.
Oh, yeah. I remember the city population sign was 300K at the time, you know.
I remember that. Yeah. It was a different place.
And, it was.
Know, yeah. To see it grow has been amazing.
Yeah.
Those are the days, though, right? Mm-hmm. But now we're back to that as far as traffic goes.
Yeah.
It's like we've pedaled backwards a little bit. I guess it's worth mentioning that this pandemic really didn't affect you guys in a way that like a traditional, because you were directly affected.
Yeah, well, I was fortunate. I had started a personal chef service prior, so I was able to get into houses, you know. But I saw that y'all set up the market, and I thought that that was a brilliant way for chefs to be able to reach out and to still give back to people, you know.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it was by accident, but this is what happened: is when COVID hit early March, we realized that we were going to get impacted as well. So we lost all of our catering business overnight. A bunch of catering orders got canceled, right? And that's tens of thousands of dollars just gone overnight, right? But we saw that our online delivery ordering business was still okay. It took a small hit initially.
Right.
But then we were hearing stories about our friends in the service industry who were shutting down, you know, employees that were losing their jobs or being laid off or furloughed. And
it's horrible.
You know, in this industry, a lot of us are paycheck to paycheck, right? And so when you can't have that and it's just cut off all of a sudden, then it could be detrimental. So, you know, I know we can't make a great impact, but one thing we can do is provide fresh, hot food for someone, right? And so it was a small, like, 30-second video clip that we said, hey, service industry folks, come out. Reach out to us. We'll give you free food. No questions asked.
Free. That's awesome. Yeah.
And then that just kind of snowballed. And then a lot of people reached out to us and said, hey, I'd love to donate to the cause. How do I help out? And we're like, well, shit, I don't know. Sorry, excuse my language here.
You're all right.
I don't know if we can do that or how do we do that. I guess we should set up a Venmo and a GoFundMe. I mean, we didn't even think about doing that before, right? So we did. And then all of this money started pouring in. We're like, whoa, what's going on here? And we're like, okay, well, now we have a responsibility to really make this money work and get back to the community a lot more. We set up the So Giving curbside drive-through at one of our locations. And just people from all over town were just driving up and lining up. And we were like 20, 30 cars backed up. And so we just had all this food under the tent, and we were just putting the food into bags and putting them in their trunk. And off they went, and
expanded it beyond service industry. So anyone who drove up, we just
get food.
Yeah, we just threw the food in the trunk.
That's so good.
Yeah, and then in May we pivoted that idea, and we said, you know, as parents, because we got children that are in elementary school.
Okay.
As parents, you know, one of the things that's really more difficult, and you know, our wives are, we really need to appreciate our wives a lot here, because they're really taking on the bulk of the homeschooling process, right?
Sure.
But it made us realize how much we should appreciate our teachers. You know, they're often underappreciated, definitely underpaid, and you know, their world got totally flipped upside down too during this pandemic, right? They had to figure out how to reteach.
Yeah.
And so it was supposed to be just, again, a small gesture. And then because we got all these donations in, we said, hey, you know what would be awesome is if we could donate $50,000 worth of food. Let's get 1,000 teachers $50 worth of food each. And it happened. And word got out. Teachers sent us emails and personal messages saying how much they appreciate it, because often they're not the ones. I mean, they're like under the radar a lot, right?
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so... And admittedly, you know, we got a lot of great press out of this, right? We got a lot of marketing, a lot of people reaching out to us saying thank you. And I think what's happened is like so true to the Austin community. Like, we did it because we felt like the Austin community has been great to So Chinese Delivery, right? They adopted us as a restaurant concept here in Austin. And we're like, yeah, I'm an Austinite. I want to give back. So I gave back, or we gave back with So Giving.
Sure.
And then it turned back around again. And they're like, you know what? We're going to support you guys because of the support you're providing the city. And, you know, we haven't shared a lot of this, but during this pandemic, our business has multiplied.
Wow.
Yeah, we're way up. right now. So
yeah, you guys were, it's almost like you subliminally set yourself up for super success, right?
So here's the weird thing, right? Right. COVID happened around March or South by Southwest. January 2020, January 1st, we officially converted from an LLC organization into something called a benefit corporation.
Oh.
With the intention, a benefit corporation is organized similarly to a C corp, but a benefit corporation, or what some people call a B corp, is we emphasize giving back to the community, and it's part of the value of the company, one of the value systems of the company, so that profits aren't necessarily the number one reason,
sure,
you know, why we exist.
Yeah, talk about things falling into place.
Yeah, and 3 months later, after that official conversion, we, you know, were able to put into practice.
Yeah, that's so neat. I mean, you know, the way that everything happened. And to hear a success story like this is tremendous. I'm a success story. You know, I was able to, in November, start a little business, like I said, and be able to get into the houses. You know, and as a restaurant operator, I would be struggling right now. And you guys, to hear this, is, and the way that y'all give it back, and the everything that ties together, I mean, it's really great, really refreshing.
It is. And just so people are clear, there's no brick and mortar here. This is basically why you guys aren't directly affected. Or is there?
I think at the end of the day, you need to kind of define, you know, and we'll talk about this.
Down,
right, exactly. Okay. What is brick and mortar? What is sit down? What is cloud kitchen? What is ghost kitchen? Like, we need to kind of define the terms because they're being loosely thrown around.
Sure. Well, I'm a little confused because I was talking to him about this. I was like, what? Ghost kitchen, phantom kitchen? What exactly is going on? But
we actually don't even know if there's a term for us per se.
So this is it's a totally new thing, as far as you guys know.
It's not. What is Domino's to you?
Domino's, right.
What is Domino's to you?
but pizza delivery. Yeah.
It's a brand.
That's all
I think. But in terms of category?
Oh, yeah.
It's not Ghost Kitchen. Yeah. It's not brick and mortar, right? Yeah.
It's not full service. Do they sit down? Because Pizza Hut has some sit down.
They have like one table. Does that count?
Yeah, right.
That was a big thing about Pizza Hut, is that they try to get into the more sit-down business. And
oh, it didn't work out?
Yeah, it didn't really work out for them.
I've definitely been to one in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All you can eat, yeah.
Is Domino's technically quick service, I guess?
Yeah. So I think the category they fall under.
And that's what you guys are going for, quick service. Because Domino's has got that down to a science, but your website is nice and polished up.
It's beautiful.
And do you do the similar, because I unfortunately am out of the delivery zone, but the where Domino's does, like, it's in the oven. We're checking it out.
Yeah.
It's on its way.
Yeah.
It's in your driveway. It's at your door. You know, all this.
Yeah. We definitely have our own version of it.
Yeah, sure.
You know, there are some fundamental differences in our tracker that we build into it. Ours is more based on the process instead of where you're at. And so there are some fundamental differences from the Domino's tracker that they have, but
it's speed is what you guys are going for as well. Because Domino's, at a certain point, went from, like, you would order it and think you were going to take care of something, and it was like at the door. And they're like, how? I ordered a half sausage. Mm-hmm. Like, they had to make that somehow. And it's like they must be driving around in the neighborhood, like, telepathy.
Yeah.
He's about to order.
You know, one of the things, and we haven't actually talked a whole lot about this internally, but one of the things that I think we've done at So is we sacrificed the promise of speedy delivery with quality and consistency.
I'd rather have that.
And right? Transparency.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Right. So it's like, you know, not everybody has to have their meal at their door in 30 minutes, right? But if you say, hey, we'll be there in an hour, and you've established that culture, but you know that your food's going to be hot and fresh when it arrives.
And I'll wait.
Like, yeah, dude, I'm totally down with that, right?
For sure.
And so transparency and providing accurate information is what we consistently work on. It's not, hey, we need to get to your door in 35 minutes or less. That's not our value proposition.
The you know, these guys who had to do kind of takeout or maybe even delivery, these restaurants that weren't normally doing that, a lot of them got a lot of flack because they just don't know how to do it. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it to bring food to your door that is fresh and looks wonderful. It's like, I mean, I know a guy, Pizzeria Grotta, they like tested out different ways to make the dough because it was like a Neapolitan and then it would arrive soggy.
Right.
There's all these things people aren't thinking about. And that's pizza. You know, pizza is like the standard delivery thing. So, but your food looks wonderful. I have yet to try it, but I definitely will be driving through and pick it up at one point. But what's the focus on the cuisine? Like, it's Chinese delivery.
Yeah, I'll let Angel take this.
Sure.
So I think we wanted to focus on specifically the classics.
Yeah, yeah.
The stuff that we don't really have to educate you on what this is because you already had it.
Yeah, yeah.
And in some instances, crave it.
Sure.
So you know chicken lo mein, beef lo mein, fried rice, and general. So chicken, sesame chicken, orange chicken, all the classic American quintessential Chinese-American dishes. And we think we do a really great job with the quality of that. And we wanted to focus on the quality of that. I don't think many Chinese restaurants actually are proud of those Chinese-American dishes like we are.
Yeah.
I think...
So that's a thing? It's more they're focused on the traditional...
Yeah. So if... Look at most Chinese restaurants in America, and they are primarily owned by first-generation immigrant Chinese, Chinese immigrants.
Right.
I don't know if they even really identify themselves per se as Chinese American. I think they're still identified as Chinese immigrants.
It irks them to.
I wouldn't say that it irks them, sure. Right? The almighty dollar tells them what the menus are going to be.
But
right?
It wouldn't be on
the menu. But in terms of pride and joy, in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, great food oftentimes is measured by love, right? And so, as opposed to almighty dollar.
Yes.
So first generation immigrants are their love and pride and joy is what they know, but it doesn't necessarily mesh with what is selling.
Yeah.
And so they'll have a menu that's for Americans and they'll have a menu for Chinese. And as a second generation Chinese American, I actually don't really fall in either, right? I'm Chinese American.
Like, give me both menus.
I'm both.
Yeah.
Right. And so I love Chinese food. Like, the what some would call traditional Chinese food from China, but I'm also American. I grew up in LA.
Yeah,
I love Chinese American food too, and I think they're not mutually exclusive. You can love both, and I think a lot of foodies start off thinking that that's not authentic, that's fake Chinese food, and I beg to differ. I think that Chinese American food, like orange chicken, General Tso chicken,
love it.
Right.
It's authentically Chinese American. It's born here in America, but it's got a really long history. Story of orange chicken General Tso goes back to like the 60s, 70s, 80s, where in New York City and Chinatown, you know, you're seeing influences from Hong Kong and Taiwan and China coming in through
mesh pot.
Through chefs
yeah.
in the Chinese restaurants, and they're experimenting too. And I think as like quote unquote foodies, we should expand our perspective on how we view the origin of certain recipes. And has Chinese American food been done poorly historically? Sure. I would say probably, yeah. But it's stemming back to like the love portion of that food is like how much love went into it. Not much, because they were just doing it because it sold, but yeah. It wasn't because they came from it, right?
Oh, they have to, not want to.
Yeah. And I think that's where we're at.
Still embrace it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take some pride in it. Enjoy. I mean, and you're that's right. Cool. The almighty dollar. I mean, I'm. It's hard to look at your menu without... I mean, all I want to do is eat it.
But there are some fundamental differences that I think we have taken, which are like, for example, you know, your brown sauce, which is the quintessential sauce for almost all Chinese cuisine. You know, traditionally, it's chicken broth base. They add some oyster sauce and things like that. Well, you know, our chef and culinary director, she was able to create our brown sauces totally vegan, right? Which is like, you can't make Chinese good food good with vegan sauce. There's no way. Well, we managed to do it. You know, our batter is 100% gluten-free. Now, the sauce right now is not gluten-free, but we do have gluten-free options, you know. So we're taking steps to also kind of get away from this negative stigma that Chinese has to be heavy, dirty, greasy, hangover food. You know, we're getting away from that. We're saying, no, you can have an enjoyable lunch or dinner, not feel like shit afterwards, and know that, hey, still tastes really damn good. And so, yeah, we take a tremendous amount of pride of being like, you know, I think Angel coined that term, authentically Chinese American, right?
Okay.
And we love it and we embrace it. And we said, you know what? We're not here to reinvent the wheel with new Chinese food. We're just going to be really fucking good at making General Tso chicken. That's like our go-to, right?
I think I should clip it out and preface that, you know, we're comparing you guys to Domino's, which is basically, you know, garbage to throw in your body. It's not very, like we're like all drawing all these comparisons. But yes, you've got, you know, vegan options and you guys are, you know, focused on the quality, not the speed. So there's definitely some clear differences between what Domino's is doing and what you guys are doing.
Yeah, and, you know, it was a study of what do people truly value, right? And so we think being honest and transparent is the number one thing, right?
Yeah.
Great customer service, have great food. Those are great too. But then you bring on, hey, how transparent can we be? Well, let's just give them free delivery always.
And no tipping.
And require tipping.
Can I ask about that? Why? What's the philosophy behind the no tipping?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. I'll give you my reasons, and then Angel kind of has his background too on that. But me personally, from a business perspective,
right,
it's I just think there is something fundamentally and quite frankly ethically wrong for a business to depend on customers' tips to supplement the income of their own employees. Like, that just doesn't jive with me. Yeah. I don't get it. Right?
Because from a perspective of a business owner?
From a perspective of a business owner.
Okay.
Now, this is going to ruffle a lot of feathers because I know there are a lot of restaurants that, and don't get me wrong, I have some restaurants right now that still take some tips over the counter and stuff too. So I just think that culturally speaking, from a business perspective, if your business can afford to pay an affordable wage that the employees appreciate, right? Our drivers start at $12 an hour. Some of them are $13, $14 an hour. But those are our cars, our fuel, our maintenance, all that. So they don't even have to have. In fact, a third of our drivers don't even have cars.
Yeah.
Right. But if you can provide all that, be a profitable business, then you have an ethical obligation to not require customers or even like present the option to tip them. Because in my eyes, even presenting the option, I think most customers would agree that they feel obligated to do that, right?
Absolutely.
Now, a lot of customers, sometimes they get mad at us and say, hey, I want to tip your driver.
That's great. What I was thinking. Yeah. There's always that person that's like, I insist.
Right.
Yeah.
And actually, one time I had to drive and a dude literally, and I was trying to be as nice as I could, he crumbled up his $5 bill and threw it in my car.
What?
Right? And I was like, okay, we're doing something wrong, though. we are doing something wrong if that's the attitude that's happened. So
I like that, actually. I mean, the employees should be happy, right? And it should not depend on what you're getting. It's hit or miss, you know? You never know.
Yeah.
And what's your approach on this?
I agree with everything that Min is saying. But as an engineer, let's use logic on tips, okay? So there are a lot of other jobs where you provide a service. And there are majority of those jobs, tipping is not part of the economy. So plumber, a fence installer. You just agree in a contract and you say, let's do it. And they do a good job and you pay the contract and that's it. So why? Why is it inconsistent? Why is it in hospitality it's different? Well, keep asking. As an engineer, when you're trying to figure out reasons for something, you just ask why.
Get right to the root.
Continue to ask why. And if you do, I encourage everyone to just Google this, right? And Google the origins and the histories of tipping, especially in light of the atmosphere around Black Lives Matter, and you will find yourself in a point in a place where you will be a little bit uncomfortable with the origins of tipping.
Wow. Okay.
Because it does stem around slavery.
Wow.
Around the the late 1800s, and when slavery was abolished, and this was a methodology of reducing the fair wages of certain people.
Wow! Yeah, that's so amazing.
There's that.
Yeah,
and also just there's as that someone period. Who
that's yeah. all that's all I need to
that's
know.
Crazy. I'm in soft. I worked in software, so I go and I get a salary and I show up to work and I do my job, and I was hired because they believed in me, because they knew inherently that. In the interviews, and I work with people, they like me, I like them, we have a relationship, we trust each other, I show up Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and I do my job awesome.
Yeah.
Why does a customer have to determine my behavior as a hospitality? No, I am a great worker because I am a great worker.
Yeah.
Period. And I don't need a tip to incentivize that.
Absolutely.
Because I'm paid.
I feel like if you get offered a tip, right, it's almost like, hey, you need help. You know, you did a better job than, you know, it's like a pat on the back. It's like, I don't need a pat on the back. I'm proud of what I'm doing.
Well, devil's advocate, right? It's a different type of situation. You know, how do you support 100 staff members with a wage?
Okay, so that's the economist in me.
Yeah.
The economist in me is, you have a very good point, but we are over 100 years of normalizing all of our pricing and our entire hospitality economy has been normalized around this structure. So
yeah.
If we were to totally rip it out, would it cause major disruption? Absolutely. And that's why this is a big problem. It can't be overcome overnight.
Well, I mean, look what Danny Meyer did. I mean, you know, they did it.
You're right, and you have to set reasons for why we need to pull away from that type of culture. Understand how we got here, and then set a plan. We as like the restaurant industry set a plan on how do we move away from it and go into actually. Treating people like professionals.
Yeah. Sure. It's come up on this podcast many times in the weeds. I don't know if you guys are on this Facebook.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah. We're, sure. We're in that.
And talking about this right now just makes me think of how we've seen workers. You know, I thought this COVID-19 would revolutionize the way we treat, you know, the hospitality industry. And sadly, it just seems like we're just kind of nothing's really happening. But you see these guys going back to work and talking about how they're not getting tipped. And just this conversation here is making me think about how sad that is, that they're depending on this stuff. And sometimes they don't get tipped and stuff.
Yeah. Shout out to Casey. I mean, he's amazing with the stuff he did over at In the Weeds. And,
go Casey.
And yeah. At the end of the day, for us, you know, we had to find out what was important to us, right? We're not actually here to change or denigrate what any other restaurant concepts are doing. Because at the end of the day, most restaurants are still taking tips. And,
sure.
And those servers work their asses off, right? And it's a hard profession to be. I was a server when I was in college too. I get it. Right. And when my wife and I and Angel's family, when we go out to eat, we try to be as generous as we can when we tip because we get it. It's a lot of work, right?
Sure, sure.
So the idea of saying that in the modern day world that tipping is fundamentally wrong is not the point. The point is that if as a business, you should grow your business in a manner where you don't have to
depend or rely
on a tipping culture to sustain your employees. And so that's what we're doing. And so, yeah, that's where we're at.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. Just was going to say, during all that, you mentioned the delivery vehicles. So that's also awesome. So what are your take on Grubhub and Uber Eats and all these guys? Can they order? No, you can't do that.
No, Angel has been on Google and on them, telling them to get get your asses off of our website because they're
on the website?
Oh, they would get on our personal mic business Google page. And then it says like order now or whatever. And then you would see Grubhub and Seamless and Postmates. I'm like,
did you know?
Yeah. So we had to do that multiple times and we don't even accept that.
And talk about unfair.
They're crazy shady.
Yeah.
They're exploiting a loophole. Google My Business, people who own your businesses, we're all familiar with managing that. It's the directory listing. If someone Googles you, you show up as a location, right? That's right. Google My Business page. And you as an owner can manage that. You go into the URL section, you enter in your website, and you think you're golden, right? Well, Google is built off of crowdsourcing. So there are certain people who have achieved a certain reputation. When they go and review a business or they take a picture of a business and they upload it to Google and then their reputation goes up. And then, you know, you've got like a level of elite tier Google contributors who have basically 100% power to do anything they want because they're trusted. That loophole is being exploited by these third-party delivery services, and they are taking that power, going to restaurant websites, the Google My Business pages, editing them, putting in the Grubhub URL, the DoorDash URL, into the menu. They did it to us.
It happens all the time. Every one of my restaurants I own today, all of them have that.
How many people do you think catch that?
None.
Very few.
I happened to go and look at it, and I saw it, and I was like, what the fuck?
And so the way it works, if you don't know, right, how does it work? Like Grubhub?
What do you mean?
Like for the restaurants.
Oh, what does it cost 30%, them? 30%, right?
That's ridiculous.
Yes.
Isn't it like 30%? Which is a huge gouge.
So what's happening is they edit your URL to send you to Grubhub. They'll create a landing page for your restaurant. Then they'll scrape your website. Basically, it's just, you know, cheap labor going through looking at it and then taking your menu and putting it on their website. And then marking it up, putting the Grubhub commission on
there. You don't even know.
You don't even know, right? Because they didn't talk to us. And then the customers will order.
Yeah, that's
true. And then the driver will show up at your restaurant with the Grubhub credit card and place the order there. So then the customer is getting your food. And
there's a word for that.
Yeah.
So this has actually happened with you guys as well. I mean, it's not like you
multiple times.
Okay.
It's happened to everyone.
So how is that legal? Can't answer that question.
You know, the big dogs in Silicon Valley,
I don't care.
They're all incestuous in a way, right? Sure. Like when you order on Yelp, you're actually just ordering on Grubhub.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a Yelp and the Grubhub partnership.
Yeah.
And so if you call the phone number on Yelp, it's a Grubhub phone call.
That's happening. It's not even to you.
That's happening.
And it is to you. But it's a middleman phone number,
which they charge for, by the way.
They count that as a sales marketing count. So then they send you a bill saying, we gave you the advantage of X number of phone calls through our marketing platform.
Oh, my goodness.
And you owe us blah, blah, blah for those calls. And it's just your Yelp listing.
Very, very petty. That's ridiculous.
Wow. Yeah, there's predatory is a really common word thrown around about these services. But here's my main issue with them is that when they were really first introduced into the economy, you know, several years ago, the value proposition was, look, you're a fully operational restaurant. And what we're going to do is bring incremental income. People who weren't going to come to your restaurant because they want food delivered, right? And so it made sense. It was like, okay, at 25, 30, 35% commissions, that's not really going into the operating costs because these are sunk costs that I already have for my regular operations. So fine, I'm going to make a little less money, but I'm not worried about the operation expenses on it. So it made sense, right? Okay, we can make some extra cash there. But what's happened is during this pandemic, they've marketed themselves as basically heroes to all these restaurants. And they're saying, look, we're here to help and we're going to do this. But really what's happening is they're still charging 25, 30%. Some of them gave a promotional time period where they're waiving some of the fees for a short time period. But now you're talking about This is all of the restaurant's income. It's not incremental income anymore. And now they're making no money because they're still paying rent. They're still paying utilities on 100% of sales that are going through third-party delivery, right? And so the mathematics no longer works when it's not designed specifically for incremental sales, right?
Yes, this makes sense.
But they're marketing it in a way where, hey, we're here to save your restaurant life. And that's where it's all messed up.
Can you think of one of your chef buddies, like when this happened, these restaurants that weren't doing delivery, it's like everybody wanted to be accessible for, you know, Grubhub or whatever it is, Uber Eats or
Toast.
Favors.
Toast came into the game on this too. You know, I mean, there's a...
Sure, they built their own.
So it's a weird thing because they're like definitely cashing in on this. And then they're all, you know...
But I think it's amazing what you guys have done. You've taken them out of the equation. You don't have a dine in, you have a building where you can create whatever you want and you can get it to people and you do good things with it. And I think that's amazing.
Well, wait, you guys, this was when all this happened, when this went down, sorry to interrupt you. The, like I was specifically thinking of the peach tortilla when everything was going down, the thought crossed my mind. I was like, why do we have any, you know, third party delivery? Why doesn't the restaurant just create a team with vehicles and then it's all about their quality? Like you get because you get the Grubhub driver, that's a thing, right? Or Favors, whatever these guys, and they pick it up and maybe they stop at a gas station.
Oh,
and, you know, maybe
did you know that 1 out of 4 third party delivery drivers admit to eating the food?
No. Oh my goodness.
Did you know that?
I wonder how many people who just heard that will never order.
That's like 25%. Especially if you get...
That's one of us in here.
I mean, pizza's hard to do. But French fries, man. French fries, chicken tenders.
You pick it up, you're smelling it. You're like,
anything that there's a lot of.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine?
That is crazy.
They'll do things like... accept your order, go grab the physical food, cancel the order before saying that they accepted the order. So then now they've got the food.
And they sell it.
And then they eat it.
Or they eat it. They sell it themselves.
Dinner serve.
My goodness.
So you mentioned, you know, like why are restaurants, you know, Eric over at Peach.
I guess the reach, right? That's the problem.
Well, it's a lot of things. One, you know, you think about the kitchen itself. They're not actually designed to be sort of this... you know, this line where you're designed for packaging food, right? They're usually, hey, plated. Here are the apps and plates. And, you know, it's a different logistics there. And then secondly, managing a fleet of drivers is actually a difficult task. It's not easy, right? And then there's a totally different marketing aspect. So you're really just introducing a totally different business.
Sure.
And this is why, like, you know, we talk about things like Panda Express and stuff, you know, like, why wouldn't Panda Express do this? Why haven't they done this? And, you know, they're 2,000 stores. They're 2,000 units.
How many drivers is that?
Yeah. And then how many
vehicles and
drivers? They have to fundamentally change the way the kitchen looks and and operates to 2,000 units. I mean, it's a major investment, right? And but I think this is like a good segue to talking about, you know, is Ghost Kitchen and Cloud Kitchens the future of really restaurants, especially as we go through this COVID thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, is that the future? And we get hit up a lot, right? A lot of people call me and say, hey, man, I want to do what you're doing for my cuisine.
Wow. Or they say, hey, can I load my food up on your website?
He came over here ecstatic talking about that.
Yeah.
You know, why not Italian? You know, whatnot?
Yep. I mean, just to think about it, you have the space, you know, you have the opportunity to invent yourself as whatever you want. I mean, why does your focus, I mean, I understand why it is, but you can be whatever you want. And like you said, the future of, you know, and people are going to want to go out less for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what you just described, Annie, is exactly what Kitchen United and Cloud Kitchens, you know, Travis Collins Cloud Kitchens, what they've essentially built. But I don't know if we want to go down that rabbit hole, but what I can tell you is that, and I've looked really, really heavily into this, the economics does not work.
Yeah.
It just doesn't.
I understand that. I mean, y'all said that y'all pick the favorites, you know, make it easy for people. You have all of the technology. I mean, why would you change that? I mean, that's such smart business. And you're giving a quality product. You care about it. You're putting the love in it. You know, everything behind it is perfect. You know, but the idea of being able to do excites me.
Yeah.
Being able to do whatever.
It can work. So like between, so as a definition, I consider Cloud Kitchen something like Cloud Kitchens and Kitchen United, which is they build essentially like a warehouse with a bunch of little micro kitchens. They charge what people think is really affordable rent. It's actually not. Like Kitchen United charges 10 grand for 400 square feet. Like it's a lot of money.
Per month? Right?
Per month.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
That is a hefty price tag.
Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. They take care of a lot of stuff. So sure. You don't have to do, you know, that includes utilities and things like that. Mm-hmm. Right. But it's still a massive chunk of your sales. Right. But then, and then, you know, they work out some sort of deal with the Grubhubs and the DoorDashes and stuff. And, you know, instead of 30%, it's 25% commission. Right. But then, you know, you still got your 25% to 30% labor cost. You still got your 25 to 30% cost of goods. You know, you're going to pay another couple of points for marketing and all that stuff. And after all that is said and done, and then you add the 25% commission, that's 80% gone.
Yeah.
Right. So you, if you sell 50 grand out of a small 400 square foot restaurant, because I don't know if you can sell much more than that, because there's just not enough space to produce that much food.
Sure.
80% out of 50,000 is $40,000. And how much was rent? It was $10,000. You just made no money employing all these people and doing all this work. It's, again, the economics. I mean, these are essentially, we work for restaurants, right? Their game is not top end numbers or whatever for restaurants. It's how do we get as many tenants as possible? Because they're going to pay rent.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Being a restaurateur is hard,
yeah.
Right? And it means that your skill set needs to be really varied. It comes to like managing the finances for food, staffing, workflow, you know, the actual food itself, which POS do I choose? You know, what's my marketing strategy? There's a whole lot of things that you want to do, that you need to do as a restaurateur, as an owner. What Kitchens United and those guys are doing is trying to say like, hey, we're a contractor.
Here's the space.
You hire us and we'll do some of your work for you. Here's the problem. And I think ideally that sort of makes sense if they were amazing and perfect.
Yeah.
But they're not, right? So, and their incentive is to just make sure that their rents are being paid by you and by many, many other people. That's their incentive. As a restaurateur, your incentive is to grow and be incrementally better.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Every day.
Every day. So as a restaurateur and an entrepreneur, you are identifying problems and you attack it. It's a bottleneck, remove it. Next bottleneck, remove it. Everything's better. Flows better, more revenues, lower costs. You have the full power of doing that because you're the owner.
Yeah.
And if I see something I don't like, I change it. But when you contract out a large portion of your business, now you are reporting to a boss.
Yeah,
you're an employee. Saying, please, can you change this thing about my marketing? Can you not market my competitors right next to me on your website? Can you change this refrigeration because it's not the right temperature or this equipment isn't right? Can you please? You're in begging mode.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't have control over anything. And the same thing is with the third-party delivery services. Their website, their flow, their tablet, their POS. And so as owners, you want full control over everything. And just look at every other really, really successful restaurant, and there's not much contracted out.
Yeah.
It's often highly tailored and curated to fit exactly their scenario because they had the power to do so. And that's exactly what So is. And these other companies have their place, sure. Maybe as a pilot, right? And you don't want to spend too much money on initial capital.
Sure, that could make sense.
But eventually, you need control if you are truly an owner that is driven and passionate about incremental improvement.
Yeah. So no, own the
point.
Own the nut. Own it all.
As much as possible.
Do you own the property over where y'all are at?
No, that's not a business. It doesn't make sense for us financially because we are predicated on going into spaces that offer really cheap rent. because we don't need a lot of fancy facades and a ton of foot traffic and retail presence. For us, geography is the most important thing. And so even within a shopping center, if there's one suite that's less attractive than another suite, put us in there. Give us lower rent, right? And so, numbers-wise, it doesn't make sense for us to kind of do that McDonald's model where you start buying out all these buildings and building an empire of property. It's just not in our cards.
Yeah. So how many do y'all have?
Two and growing real fast. We have our first location, which is in Cherrywood, right off of I-35 next to Fiesta. And then we just opened a location at Arbor near the Dave & Buster's. We are finalizing paperwork on a South Congress in Oldorf.
Yeah.
And then
that's what we're talking
about. Looking at the William Cannon and Mopac area, which will hit up your area.
No, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. So
we're William excited. Cannon Mopac. That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's exciting to hear.
We talked about, a little bit of the cloud kitchen. So really, if there are people who, especially in response to COVID, who want to kind of do a solid change to their food enterprise. Mm-hmm. The ghost kitchen model is pretty solid otherwise. I don't ever recommend the cloud kitchen model because you're just giving up too much space. If you're dependent on third-party delivery, you're just bound to fail, in my opinion, right?
Unless they change their ways.
Right, unless they make some fundamental changes, but they're not really incentivized to do that right now.
Sure.
Right? But if you go into the ghost kitchen model, which means you do own everything on your own, but you're not paying out 25, 30% to third-party delivery, and figure out a way to have internal delivery. It might still be more the Domino's model where the drivers are using their cars, which is fine. But you manage and you control the delivery aspect of it and make that a fundamental part of your ghost kitchen concept. I think there's a lot higher chance for success there. Now, it's important you pick the right kind of cuisine because not everything can transport well. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be a bread heavy or a batter fried heavy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Right? So, but yeah, there are tons of opportunities there. We kind of do as friends, we consult a lot. So,
Well, I always ask one standard question on this podcast. If there's going to be one question, and that's where are your favorite places to eat? But I guess I'm going to alter this a little bit to where would you guys prefer to order food from? Where do you guys, especially nowadays when everybody's doing that?
I got kids, so I actually order Domino's quite a bit. Domino's.
Yeah, actually. Yeah,
it's in the oven.
Yeah. But,
it's on its way.
Out of principle, I don't order from third party services ever.
I think I might rethink that as well.
Yeah.
There are needs there. I get it. There are people who don't have cars or some of our senior citizens who just don't have the ability and they depend on that. So for those purposes, I totally get it. Like, I'm not knocking it 100%. I just wish they changed their behavior, right?
Yeah.
What our family likes to do is we have our go-to favorite restaurants in town, and it's nice to kind of get away from it all and just sit down with the family and, eat. I mean, you mentioned Din Ho a lot, right?
That's my favorite, dude. I love Din Ho.
Yeah, we go to Din Ho. We're friends with the owners there. And what's funny about Din Ho is that's kind of one of the spots in Austin where you go to get authentic, quote-unquote, authentic Chinese food. Well, I guarantee you their number one seller is General Tso chicken.
Right.
Right.
So. We go to Peach Tortilla.
Yeah. Peach is good.
Yeah. Right. Eric is our man. I don't know if you guys know this. It's probably okay to share, but Eric is he's an investor and an advisor.
Sure.
So he's part of So Ownership too. So
Steph mentioned that.
Yeah.
One of the greatest dudes in Austin.
Just for sure.
Pure hustler, good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere else that you want to?
This one is more nostalgic for me, but one of the, I mentioned I came to Austin like 35 years ago. So for me, Korea House, they've had their up and downs for sure, especially when it transitioned from their parents to the kids who now run and operate, who are, incidentally, they're older than I say kids, but they're older than I am. They were the first iconic Korean restaurant in Austin, right? And so for me, it's real nostalgic. I go there and the Korean barbecue, and they've changed up a lot of things internally. And
took the sushi bar out?
They did. I think they decided, hey, we're going to focus more on the Korean food than the sushi side, which I think is a brilliant idea. Our philosophy has always been, look, you're not going to be great at everything.
Yeah.
Figure out what you're really good at and double down, triple down on that and make people love it, right?
So is that your favorite Korean barbecue in town?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's still a lack of great Korean food in town, but man, when I've got that that calling for some good galbi, that's where I go.
I like that place a lot. Yeah. I go over to Hana.
Yeah,
And get the galbi over there. I love that.
Yeah, have you been to the H Mart?
Oh yeah, many times. Yeah, okay. yeah that place is good. The chicken wing place, what's it called?
Oh yeah,
Donkey Moe's.
I happen to own that.
Do you really? You own Donkey Moe's? Yeah. Excellent. So you know, awesome. I was the culinary director at Moonshine.
Oh, okay. And I did, just up the street.
Yeah, and so I did some chicken wings over there with some gochujang and stuff. Yeah, and I we came over there a lot and ate a lot of your wings.
Didn't
we
do a gift card exchange with Moonshine? We
probably did. Yeah, Joe.
Yeah. So I'm Korean and I happen to love Korean food, and so yeah, we're doing that. You know, I get to have the amazing privilege of working with Angel and the rest of our team, but I am actually part of another group too. And just a plug for myself here, I guess we're actually opening up, this is going to be the first time I'm broadcasting this, a Korean galbi gym, which is a braised Korean barbecue concept in South Austin by the Alamo Draft House.
Excellent.
That's coming in a few months.
Yes. Yeah. Round of applause for South Austin. We're begging for it.
Yeah. Braised Korean barbecue.
I can't wait. That's tremendous. In my opinion,
better than grilled.
So how does that work? How does that work? Do you get the pot? Is it like hot pot or?
It's not hot pot. It's similar to Korean barbecue that you see with the short ribs and stuff. But instead of just grilling, it gets slow cooked for us, we'll use a combi oven, right?
So you do it in the kitchen?
In the kitchen. Okay, it'll slow cook for like 6 hours and then it's just like fall off the meat and then you've got all this really good flavoring and it'll come with the rice and the side dishes and the lettuce.
So that's like Momofuku style, bosam?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's right. Bosam being the pork belly, yes. But in a sense, yeah, this will be short ribs and it's got totally different flavoring, but
You're going to have all fundamentally, the stuff. With, oh man, that excites me.
Yeah.
With a little bit of soju. So what's the drink called? The soju and the hype beer and you snap it with a chopstick. What's that called?
Yeah, it's somek.
Oh man, that's
soju
fun.
And nekju. Yes. Yeah, it's a hybrid. It's a combination of the words. Yeah. I mean, they're basically like sake bombs, except instead of sake,
foamy. You
got soju. Yeah. It's great. I mean, the eating and drinking culture in Korean food and Chinese food is so just fucking awesome.
It's amazing.
Right? Yeah.
So I go to, it's on 620 and Lake Creek Parkway, Charm.
Yeah.
Korean barbecue.
Yeah.
Or Korean fried chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I drink those drinks. Me and my wife had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah. Good times. Yeah.
What's the ETA, if you don't mind me asking, for the...
For Jim? Yeah. It's called Jim's JJIM Korean Braised Barbecue.
And you said by Alamo? Oh, is it not in that...
on Lamar.
North by Northwest was?
No, it's on South Lamar.
Oh, South Lamar.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Alamo Draft House is South Lamar.
Oh, right there. Which location?
There's the one spot that I think was formerly... it used to be Box Table.
Okay, so Box.
And then it became this Connection Pizza.
Oh, you're going to
So that's
there.
Right across from the movie theater.
Right across
the corner. All
that. Yeah, right across from TLC.
Highball.
Yep, directly in front of all
that's
that.
That's a tricky spot.
It's a good spot. Yeah, parking is fun.
Well, I've
fun
seen
there.
Many things. Like Delicious was there. And but you got the theater there.
It's good traffic.
I think it's the parking is what is hard for people.
Yeah, definitely there's a parking issue, but there's something weird about Koreans not wanting to go south of the river. There's like no Korean food south of the river. Oh. None. It doesn't exist. And so, whereas there's like 10 of them in north of the river. And so we're like, you know what? We're going to, I guess, break the rules.
That's a great location though. You got TLC, that's still there, right? And you got the Lick ice cream and you got the movie theater and you got Soto.
Yep.
So
you're going to be where the pizza place was.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're
cool.
In that spot. Yeah.
Cool. Exciting. Oh, I go there frequently to TLC. So I'll
Dude, you got to come check
hi.
It out.
Yeah. Is the food bar still there?
The food
like bar. Like Box Table? They had the chefs.
Oh, no. We're taking all that out. So, you know, that whole area, when we first checked it out, we was like, there's a little bit of, it's a little pretentious here. And so we're like, you know what? We're going to go chill, laid back, Korean barbecue, funky. And we're like, we're going to be super casual, but with like gourmet quality food.
Yeah.
And we're like, let's make it affordable and let's make it something that people just crave. And because of COVID, I mean, you talk about impact of this, we're even building in a little bit of a tiny marketplace within the restaurant so that people can do grab and go.
Like a Korean like market?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That's
so
awesome. I'm a fan of that. That's
you do cool. like ferments and stuff or?
Yeah, we'll do some kimchi and stuff like that. Yeah, for
Very
sure.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Angel, what about yourself? Where's your go-to spots here in Austin?
I'm on the east side, so probably ramen tatsu. Via 313 is just a couple you blocks could just away. Say east side,
right? You're good to go.
Salt and Thyme. Yeah.
So many good spots.
So many good spots. Suerte.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good spot right there.
Yeah.
Taco.
Have you met Leanne at Bento Picnic yet?
Of course. Yeah. We're friends.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's great.
She's amazing.
She is amazing. And then the Juice Land, that's the health corner to me. Juice Land and Bento Picnic.
Yeah.
It's a good spot. Anything we should touch on here before we wrap up?
For me, I think it's really important that people understand as we build So Chinese Delivery, this wasn't just a project that we said, hey, let's just go take over America with great Chinese food. Don't get me wrong. That's part of the mission, right?
Yeah.
But one of the things that... one of the things that we're trying to do is make it an emphasis to, as we expand to different markets, connecting with the community is like at our core, just fundamentally so important. And so it needs to be where, as we go into these markets, we're like, dude, we need to be local.
Yeah.
I know we're a chain or whatever, but we're going to be local to that market and we're going to connect with that community.
I think that's very Austin of you.
Yes, it is quite.
I think regardless, that's what you'll probably bring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. So you guys are sodelivery.com. You can access all the locations there and all these new ones we're talking about that might be popping up soon. And any other spots? You guys are on Instagram. You guys are on Facebook, all those jams, just so.
Yeah, we've got a great team of people. One of the things that we've been able to be good about is hiring really good people, partnering up with really good folks. We've got great investors. We've got great advisors, Eric being one of them. Steph, she's really helped us out a tremendous amount.
Great.
We've got a great social media person. And, I think if you surround yourself with good people who really have the ability to elevate the whole dream together, man, all kinds of stuff can happen. It's great. And quite frankly, a lot less stress too.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Thank you guys for coming in here. You guys are more than welcome to come back.
Oh, we'd love it.
Anytime. I say that to everybody and I sincerely mean it. Come on back in whenever you guys like.
It was a lot of fun learning about you guys. Thank you all.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for taking the time, guys. It's great sharing the story and I really appreciate the feedback too. That's wonderful.
For sure. Thank you guys.